Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, you know what? Restaurants are a family business. And this new foodie craze restaurant industry, family now means business partners, sous chefs, pastry chefs, distributors. Family means something different, but not so for the Banos family. Jimmy Banos Sr. and Jimmy Banos Jr. are one of the only father-son teams working in downtown fine dining. I guess that's what you'd call it. Banos Sr., of course, is the man behind Heaven on 7 and one of the best Louisiana-style restaurants in all of the country. And Banos Jr. is the man behind Purple Pig right here on Michigan Avenue. He won a James Beard Award in 2014. They're both my guests tonight at the big table. You guys are chomping at the bit right there because you're like, there's another fathers and son that I'm not thinking about?
No, I don't think so. No, not in Chicago.
No, not in Chicago.
Uh-uh.
You know, I thought about that because I'm like, well, you know, I think about, obviously family's a big part of restaurants. We know restaurants to be all, I mean, you always think about family style, family owned.
Absolutely. Right.
For both of you, I mean, obviously, Jimmy, you grew up in, you know, watching your dad cook and work in restaurants.
Literally.
So talk about what it's like to work in this town, you know, with your dad.
It's, like you said, I did grow up going to Heaven on 7, starting at 3 years old, 4 years old. It's a business that it was great. I was lucky because it was something that my dad never pushed on me. A lot of the times when you hear about, you know, somebody that, you know, whatever line of business it is, oh, they try to force their kid into the business and then it ends up turning into a disaster. One of the major things he instilled in me was whatever you do, you need to work your tail off. And I was lucky enough to enjoy the same line of work that he does, and it was never a pressure, but if you're going to come to work, you're going to work.
Right.
You know, so growing up in it, I got to see, you know, really firsthand the ins and outs of it. You know, like we talk about, not just how unbelievably special in the 80s and 90s Heaven on 7 was and obviously still is, but to be able to see what he was accomplishing with New Orleans-style food in Chicago before New Orleans-style food was trendy in Chicago. Like, Southern food is trendy now outside of the South. So to really put that in perspective, to see what he was doing back then, it really taught me hundreds of different lessons, not just with food, but more even on the mental kind of state that you need to be.
Did you think about that when Jimmy was growing up? Were you like, I don't want to push him into restaurants, or were you more like, you know what, you're going to do what I do?
I wanted
used to throw buckets of water on my head when we're in the bed and wake up and we're not just
wake up. We need to chop some vegetables.
He would used to wake me up. I'll tell you. And no, you know what? Whatever you do, I want you to work hard. I want you to be happy. And so I brought him to work, but it was, you know, when I brought him at honestly 3 years old. Because, you know, I'm Greek American, we don't believe in child labor laws, you know, so. Okay, sorry about that. No, but anyway, it's that I made it fun. You know, we brought coloring books and things like that. So first he would come and he would eat. Well, we would go to the market first and then we would come and get something to eat. Then he would clean the stools and clean the table stems and then maybe go color or bring some kind of game or whatever he would do. And then we would always try to do like mix flour, sift flour, and make that day when he come try to make meatloaf or something that you could do with your hands.
Get your hands dirty.
Yeah. So it was good. Then he graduated. Then he, my dad was working with us also. And
which was even cooler, by the way. This shows like a generational difference. He was in his 60s doing it on the line for 700 people a day. I mean, that's not heard of.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about your family. I mean, Jimmy, let's talk about you getting in the business. We heard your son talk about, you know, watching you do the work and the lessons learned. But what did you learn from your dad?
You know, hard work and never say I can't do it. You know, it's always we're going to do it. And there's no mountain that we couldn't climb. And I love working with my dad. It was just awesome. We went, you know, worked together at Heaven. We were next to each other, and I really prided myself not to make a mistake because I never wanted to disappoint him. And he was a 10-year, you know, Marine vet, so he was a badass, you know. But it was just great. And for him to see, you know, me doing New Orleans style food and kind of like a, you know, Greek, and it was actually a Jewish coffee shop that we took over. Mm-hmm. He sat back and saw this whole place change and, you know, quadruple in business. And then, you know, years later, then Jimmy starts, and when he's testing the recipes at Heaven on 7, because we were not open at night at the time, and then, you know, he's, you know, pig's ears or something else, and we're thinking, well, you think that's going to go, you know? But I knew he felt, you know, as my dad saw in me, you think alligator etouffee is going to go in 1984 on the seventh floor of a
right.
nondescript office building, so... You know, I let him fly, and
what I mean, obviously, working your family's in restaurants, your family's in food. But did you ever have any thought, Jimmy, that you know what? I'm not going to follow in my dad's footsteps. I'm going to do something else. I'm not going to get into food.
Oh no, I started running around at one of my dad's steakhouses when I was, you know, 3, 4. They had these awesome breadsticks that I found years later, and I still buy them. They're just awesome. And then I started working at 9, and I never thought I was going to do anything else.
There wasn't like a move to say, you know what?
Can you say briefly you thought about being a vet?
I thought being a veterinarian, but you have to be really smart for that. My mental capacity can't handle it.
I think it's great to hear. I mean, both of you talking about the influences that your fathers have had, and they're similar stories about how you started. I mean, at 3, 4, 5 years old, not necessarily, you know, your dad saying you're going to do this, but finding interest and wanting to be around the family business.
Absolutely. I think same way that he was with my grandfather, just like, I'm going to show you what it is to work and to appreciate hard work to get what you want. But, you know, it just happened. You know, we both fell in love with, you know, everything about the business, which is the only way that you can be successful, because it's a nasty business.
Well, you know what? Let's talk more about it. Let's take a quick break and let's talk more about that, because, mm-hmm. you know, we've had a lot of chefs on and we've talked to people in the restaurant industry. And the one thing that we always come back to is how much of a grind it is.
Right.
And I want to get both of your takes on that. Jimmy Banos Sr., Jimmy Banos Jr., the Banos family in studio tonight. Guests at the big table. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest tonight at the big table, the Banos family, Jimmy Banos Sr. and Jimmy Banos Jr. Jimmy Banos Sr. is, of course, the man behind Heaven on 7, 30 years plus in Chicago. Jimmy Banos Jr., the man behind the Purple Pig, won a James Beard Award in 2014 right here on Michigan Avenue. Right before the break, we talked about hard work. I mean, that was right. What you were getting at, both as, you know, your family and what was instilled. But working in restaurants is, some would say, it's a glutton for punishment in the sense that it's past hard work. Yeah. I mean, talk a little bit about that, how hard it is to actually not only run a restaurant and run a kitchen, but just what it does to your life.
Well, I mean,
you want to start?
Yeah. Mentally, mentally, physically. I mean, I'm still, I think I've been re-energized. I think just working with my son and his crew, the younger guys, and then my nephew at Heaven, and I have more energy now, I think, more than ever. I mean, I've always had, I just keep on going, you right. know. But you need to be mentally tough. I mean, they don't teach you in chef school about lawyers and accountants and how to negotiate a deal, mm-hmm. how much money you should have, you know, is there enough money to have, you know.
Bottom lines, yeah, right, right.
Exactly. They might hit a little bit of it, but no, you know, it's all about the deal, and that's going to be the – how you're going to be successful in a part of the deal, and how you're going to be successful in your restaurant.
And I would say that even past that, the time spent, I mean, we talk to chefs where they get in the morning and they leave at one. It's a long day,
a really long
to
day.
Run a kitchen. I would right. assume Purple Pig is how your life has been for the last couple of years.
Yeah. We've been, this winter, it'll be 7 wow. years already.
Wow.
Which is,
it's like a, like
crazy.
That.
Yeah. It's very crazy. Nuts. Yeah, you know, it's, you know, we opened when I was 25. Everything was all very, very new to me. And that, again, growing up in the business, having a really understanding already of what it takes, what kind of perseverance and strength and toughness that you have in order to keep pushing forward. That's the kind of things that is really, like, truly, like we say, it's just like in the Banos blood. It's like in our mm-hmm. mindset, we never stop, there isn't ever I can't, and that starts from my grandfather teaching my dad that and passing it down to me, just that the grind, it's going to be tough, you know, and there's going to be a lot of bad times, there's many good times, there's going to be a lot of tough times, but it's really having that kind of the ability to stay positive and keep going. And then, like my dad touched on before, the other aspects of of the industry. It's the cooking part of it is, I wish it was just the cooking part.
Mm-hmm.
I wish. If I would just have my time in the prep kitchen and developing dishes all day, nobody bothered me, that would be the life, right?
Tell me about it.
But, you know, those things that you don't, you know, I'm trying to teach my guys that I was exposed to at a young age now, obviously growing up in a Greek-American household, as far as in the kitchen would go, he taught me how to watch the pennies, never waste anything. You know, if somebody's scraping out a bowl of sauce without using a spatula and they leave some in the bowl, like the famous lines, if you do that every day, add it up, you know, from 3 to 65 days, you're going to end up with a whole gallon of the sauce.
I did it at Heaven today. I mean, yeah,
the thing is these kids don't get it. And then negotiating prices for our vendors.
Mm-hmm.
I got the aggression from him. I'm become notorious on the street now with our vendors. They don't want to. They don't want to deal with me.
They tell me he's worse than me.
I'm worse.
Good. I'm proud of him.
Well, you know, both of you have. You know, obviously you've with the Banos family. I mean, obviously we hear that hard work is a part of your ethos, like your ethic, right? But you both have gone and worked in other kitchens, or at least seeked out advice from some traditionally famous chefs. I mean, Mario Batali worked for.
Yep.
I mean, what did they do to help you with that work ethic? Was it similar? I mean, did you fit in with that crew? Were you like, oh yeah, everyone's working this hard, or did you recognize like, oh man, I'm running circles around this kitchen?
Well, for me personally, I had worked at other kitchens prior to working in Mario Batali's restaurants, but when I started there, I was chasing my tail for sure. I mean, it was the opening team at his restaurant Del Posto, which mm-hmm. has been open for 11 years now.
Yeah.
I mean, at one point there were 2 Michelin star. It was really, really difficult, you know, and I was way out of my league beyond, you know, when I started.
Really?
You know, I mean, well, everybody there at the time were all hand-picked guys, either from all of his other restaurants already, or guys we've at least been doing it for 10, 15 years and were seasoned cooks or chefs. So I got a firsthand experience of really what it is to be in New York City and trying to be a cook, and then being there with the best mm-hmm. of the best. And again, that survival mode
helps you.
You know, it kicks in, and that you need to be more driven than everybody else. That's mm-hmm. really at the end of the day. I mean, I remember that was just one of my experiences there, but I stayed all day, all night off the, I didn't get paid for like a 40% of the hours that I work for, but it didn't matter. I'm not there to make money. You're there to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever it took to survive, because in New York, as we all talked about, and it, you know, it's the same here now, but again, this was 10, 11 years ago, you have one off day, somebody else is going to take your job. It's really that simple.
Does that resonate with you? I mean, does the same storyline work, say, you know, 30 years ago before Heaven on 7? I mean, was it the same kind of cutthroat that we were finding from kitchens today? And
I always wanted to go to New York, so that's why I always pushed my son. I didn't get a chance to do that, you know, because I started young, and then at 22, we opened up, you know, the New Garland Coffee Shop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I didn't have a chance to go, okay, I'm going to go travel and do this. And then that's why I always try to instill it in my son. I said, hey, if you're going to do this, this is what you need to do. And he did everything that I wanted to do. You know, it was good. And for him, I thought it was really hard for him because of me also, too. I was able to open the doors for him. But then when everybody found out in the kitchen who he was, then they would try to bust his chops even worse and try to make it harder for him. And that's what even got him even tougher. So anything that's ever been thrown at us or whatever's going to ever be thrown at us, it's like nothing. It's a cakewalk compared, you know, for especially for him. And I've been through, you know, so much crap.
It's well, like, you know what? Let's take a break for the news and we'll come back. And I'd love to talk to you about, you know, obviously now 7 years at Purple Pig, 36 years at Heaven on 7. That's amazing. But let's talk about Chicago. Let's talk about what the customer wants here, what they like, what they don't like, what you guys have picked up from being here and being restaurants in this town for
absolutely.
So long.
Definitely.
The Banos family, Jimmy Banos Sr. and Jimmy Banos Jr., my guests tonight at the big table. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest tonight at the big table, the Banos family, Jimmy Banos Sr. and Jimmy Banos Jr. Jimmy Banos Sr., of course, 36 years of Heaven on 7 here in Chicago. Jimmy Banos Jr., Purple Pig, 7 years now, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Think about it. Also won a James Beard Award back in 2014 for Rising Star Chef. Both of you have been trendsetters here in Chicago. Heaven on 7, let's start there. 36 years ago, everybody knows Chicago to be a steak, you know, sort of steak and potato town, right?
Right.
This is meat and potatoes. This is what we do here. Here you come along with Louisiana style, New Orleans flavored. Right. You know, talk about entering a market like Chicago with a food that people are just not used to eating.
Yeah, I mean, it was a stretch. I mean, I remember when we first brought crawfish up, people were eating the whole thing and chewing them. I said, you know, your digestive tract is going to be, you're going to be in bad shape.
you got to teach them how to eat it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so you teach them how to eat it. And then, you know, a lot of times people use those for bait up in Wisconsin, things like that. You know, no, this is, here's how you eat it. And, you know, so from 40 pounds in a week, we'll go through now over 100 pounds in a week. So it's amazing how all that just turned, you know, turtle soup and, you know, alligator etouffee and different po' boys and different things. And people were really receptive to it. And I think we have a lot of transplanted Southerners, you know, in general. Chicago and New Orleans is a parallel. I think because of Lake Pontchartrain, I think Lake Michigan, I think there's a lot of similarities. Jazz, you know, music there, music here, you know, so it's very, of course, weather is different.
Well, I mean, now you see Chicago as a world-class dining destination. I mean, and Jimmy had a lot to do with that. But the idea of, like, so many people coming to Chicago as sort of like this, you know, almost a tourism, you know, destination. For you starting 36 years ago, it seems to me that Chicago was, it almost wasn't a dining destination.
Right. Well, then, you know, because you had just the steakhouses, but I think, and then the neighborhoods. But I think we built a niche, you know, and people would come up and let's say you would come and then this would be your place. And then you would bring somebody else and introduce that to them. And then all of a sudden you had some, you know, like almost like a cult following, you know, and this would be their kind of, this would be their joint on a seventh floor of an office building, you know, and that's how we really, how it really started. And, you know, New Orleans food started getting really popular. It's over 200 years old, but it's always been popular, but there. But we were able to, you know, I was shipping fresh seafood, everything out.
That, even that, 36 years. Yeah, I mean, that's a different thing than it is today, right?
We were, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, we were getting fish 2 days out of the water.
Getting rock shrimp for like $1 a pound. Now it's like $15.
I was the biggest user of rock shrimp actually in Chicago at the time. I actually found a fisherman in Alabama. We hooked up with him. I put him with one of my seafood purveyors, and it was unbelievable. Now you can't even touch it.
Well, Jimmy Banos Jr., I mean, the Purple Pig was a part of the not, I want to say craze, but it was new food, new experiences, small plates, but a lot of different cuts. You talk about the pig, you know, and different parts of the pig. But almost like your dad, the same kind of thing where what Purple Pig did was push the trend and introduce new things to this city.
Right. Yeah. I think building on, you know, what we're kind of getting at is, I think what really works for us is finding something that, A, that we really strongly believe in, and then that has a uniqueness to it and something that is original to us and that, you know, somebody's not going to really find anywhere else. And I think once we, you know, both found that, the rest is kind of history. You know, a lot of the stuff, you know, we were talking about developing the menu at the Purple Pig. I mean, it was a very, very much a trial and error basis coming from Italian kitchens. Mm-hmm. Now that the Purple Pig is Mediterranean, you know, more general scale, pig's ears and bone marrow and pork livers and pigtails. I had no idea what I was doing. Absolutely not. You know, I had no clue. I was,
that's fun to hear.
You know, I was just realistically, it was just like, all right, we're going to research. And again, based on what I learned as a kid, you know, about how to research, and, you know, this guy's got about 5,000 cookbooks at home. How you want to teach yourself, you got to crack some books open. You need to do some, you know, researching online, on the internet, and with books. So I did a bunch of just tried a bunch of different things, and luckily it all worked out.
Well, there's something, I mean, beyond food, as business owners in the city of Chicago, there is something to be said about the nonconformity, about not opening a steakhouse or trying to do something
or
different.
Or if you're going to do the steakhouse, do something totally different.
Originality. Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's an originality to your family, but also to both of you individually. What part does that play in Chicago? Are people rewarding you for that individuality, for that, you know, the idea of being an original and coming to your restaurants more? Or do you feel like it's harder because you guys are introducing new things to an audience that maybe doesn't want it?
I think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah. That's a great question.
It is a very good question. You know, I think people, you need to do what's in your heart, what's true to yourself. Now, if you're just trying, like if you're, for example, you have Grant Atkins at Alinea, if you're somebody who's trying to, like, oh, like, that's working, I want to try and do his style.
You're not going to be able to.
It's not going to work. Right. If you're going to try and, like, you need to find something that's true to you and that you believe in it and hopefully and execute it. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the difference. You have to execute it.
There's
now,
ideas and then there's execution.
Exactly.
Right?
Now, you can do things for the wow factor, you know, pig guts and tripe and all this fun stuff that chefs like to do. But if it doesn't taste good, people are going to come at the beginning to see and try it. But if it's not good, they're not going to come back.
It might be easier now to have audiences sample something they might be used to just because of what's happened in the last 10 years.
Right.
But for
Absolutely.
You, Jimmy, you know, you're asking people to taste some things and to try your and be a part of your business. You know, it's almost like the frontier.
Right. And then but then when they taste it and then they trust you, you have to have your customers trust you. And when they do, anything you put out, they'll eat it and they'll keep on coming back. And that's what you have to do. You can't be just whimsy and just like fly by night and let me put, you know, 25 things on a plate, you know, and if they believe you and if you do it right, they know, they'll stay.
Absolutely.
You guys both spent, you know, your lives here in Chicago. I mean, talk about what this city means to you personally, not just your food. Obviously, you guys have become, I mean, you are a Chicago food. Both of you are restaurants
Thank
like that.
You.
But talk about what it means to you personally. I mean, you could set you went to New York City. I mean, you could have set up shop in New Orleans. There's other places. What does it mean to be a Chicago restaurant?
Well, for me, knowing even when we opened. Okay, so I knew it was. I'd say so. It's almost 7 years now, and you know, just think about how many new restaurants there's opened in 7 years. Mm-hmm. Like every month there's like at least 10 new joints opening up. This is always what I knew was going to happen, even at a younger age. I knew this was going to happen. Everybody, as slowly as better restaurants start coming in, more talent comes in. It's just a chain reaction. Everybody wants to start coming here now. And then you got homegrown chefs, you got out of town chefs. So the more talent you have in this city, the more exciting it is. That's what you want, mm-hmm. and that's what's going to bring more people, tourism, more locals. It's more of a big sense of pride and excitement to what's going on right now, you know. And I'm extremely proud to grow up here and be here now, and continue to see where the next 10 years takes us, because it's only going to just keep getting bigger and bigger.
Is it closer to you because you grew up here? I mean, is it closer to say like you see like the tremendous amount of success that Chicago's had as a food town.
Right.
Does it mean more to you to be a part of that because you grew up here?
Absolutely. To be a hometown kid, I have a little extra more joy for me, you know, unless – there's nothing wrong with coming from out of town. As I said, that's great. But being born and raised here and having Chicago in my blood, mm-hmm. you have more – that sense of pride, you know, like we're at the forefront of cuisine in the country, in the world. We're at the top, top two, top three cities, and you want to continue to do that. You know, competition is what makes you better. So you want more people. Right. I want more restaurants around the area. That's what makes that's better. It brings more people in, and then also if you're smart, it keeps you on top of your game.
You mentioned, Jimmy, earlier, you know, you said you kind of pushed your son to New York because you never were able to go. Mm-hmm. Why did you stay in Chicago? I mean, because you could have easily, after 10 years of doing Heaven on 7, said, you know what, we're going to open this up, we're going to try something else, move different places. What kept you here?
I asked that question to myself, like, daily.
No, really?
But, look at this weather. It's horrible. It's gloomy. It's terrible. And all of a sudden, I'll be driving in, you know, from the suburbs and I see the skyline, and all of a sudden the sun starts shining. It's like, this is why. I mean, this city is awesome. It's a great, we are very, very lucky. If the weather was really good, it would be, forget about it. We couldn't afford
weather. What makes this town click? What makes this town great?
We're a big city, but it's a big city that has a soul. There's a lot of, there's just so many great personalities and just, people always say when I was in New York, you know, like, oh, you Midwesterners are just so much more nice, you know, like you have that the big city experience here. But, you know, you could walk down the street and ask somebody for directions and they'll gladly give them to you.
Right.
Or if you go to a restaurant, Chicagoans take service very seriously now. And I don't want to say anything bad about any other city. But if you're going a lot of times to New York, I mean, I've had some unbelievably, like, very pretentious and unbearable service that would not even for 2 months that would that place be surviving. We don't accept that. Mm-hmm. And we don't accept being overcharged for stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. we're a value driven city.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And
yeah.
You need to be really conscious of that with your diners.
What do you think?
I there's no other like it. You know,
it's changing a lot. It's just constantly changing.
And we don't take any crap.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We're very Midwesterners are very, you know, we know what we want. We know how to take care of people. I mean, I'm talking in every facet of every business here.
We just had Rich Cohen and he wrote the book about the Rolling Stones and a manager in the book told him that the Rolling Stones, any band has to evolve every 5 years.
Right.
It has to evolve.
Absolutely.
And that Rolling Stones are a perfect example of why they've been able to, every 5 years they change their sound, change their look, whatever it is, but that's how you have to do it. Is that the same for restaurants?
Definitely. I see myself.
Absolutely.
I see myself at the original Heaven on 7. That, you know, a lot of, I started at 22. I see a lot of my, you know, 36 years later, I see a lot of my customers retiring or not there. So honestly, in the last year, I've been posting stuff on Instagram. You know, people think, oh, come on, are you kidding me? Posting things on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, pictures of every, I'm coming up with new dishes, and I got a fire under my butt, you know. And,
He's very tech savvy. I'm not. He's on social media all day. I don't even know how to use Twitter.
And it's just, and to be honest, and I've seen the change. I mean, Jimmy came in 2 months ago, and he looked at me. It was a Friday, and it was like the old days, just insane, you know. And he goes, the vibe in here reminds me of when I was a kid, and it's the truth.
Yes.
And people, you have to go with the times, you know, and you have to introduce new customers to what's happening, you know. It works.
Let me ask one last question for you guys. What's next for you, Jimmy? Let me start there. I mean, Heaven on 7 you've had other locations, and mm-hmm. now you're down to the spot. What's next? I mean, as you get older in age and you get closer to a point where maybe you don't want to be in the kitchen every single day.
I love it. I'm in the kitchen more now than ever, you know, because I always wear, you know, of course, different hats, but I enjoy it. That's my home is in the kitchen, you know, and I think helping Jimmy, whatever he needs from me is, you know, we're a great team together. We've got a couple ideas that, you know, are floating around in our heads, but, you know, we'll see. We'll take it easy.
Yeah.
See, it took me 17 years to open my second restaurant, and then I went kind of crazy there for a while, opened a lot of them, and then it's just like, you know, but if you don't have the right people and the people that are your clones and that think the exact same thing you are, it's not going to work.
No.
The Banos family in studio with me tonight, Jimmy Banos Sr., Jimmy Banos Jr. Thanks for being my guest tonight.
Thanks very much for having us.
Appreciate it.